Money Matters with certified financial planner Dave Pezzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Pezzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Pezzo.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo. Every week I go in and visit with Kevin Miller and have an absolute blast. It's about 30 minutes every Monday. We're going to go ahead and replay that, and I'll be talking to you live in about 30 minutes.
And joining us now, our great friend Dave Pezzo, the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial, Pezzo on Facebook, Pezzo on Twitter, perhaps coming soon, Pezzo on Instagram. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Kevin.
Good to have you with us, as always.
Awesome to be here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the jobs report that came out. Not good news for the president. Have we ever seen anything this low in quite some time?
No. This was a shocker, Kevin. This was really shocking. The 38,000 jobs when you're looking for 160,000. We had 59,000 jobs revised out for the last 2 months. So we thought the first quarter was particularly strong. Now the revisions are showing it's not as strong, and then this is falling off of a cliff. Kevin, 450,000 people left the job force, 450,000 in 1 month. So this, you know, I know the 4.7% unemployment rate is a joke, but I can't even believe we even quote it anymore or have any relevance at all. U6 is moving higher again. And again, Kevin, that's the includes the people that would want a better job along with the unemployed that are not counted in the survey.
Well, and you have always been Idaho's truth detector, the Treasure Valley's truth detector. On Money Matters, 8 to 10 here at 580 KIDO, because you've spelled this out for quite some time, and you've said, hey, these numbers aren't real. But then to have just this, I don't know how you describe the numbers that came out on Friday. It's as if the curtain has been removed from the wizard.
Yeah, it is. I think we're going to start hearing more, and I think we have, Kevin, about people talking about the U6 number and all the people that have left the workforce. We now, our workforce participation, to me, there's a couple different things that matter economically. And of course, job creation is a big deal. But we have to be creating jobs on an ongoing basis as a population grows. It's a pretty simple formula. And people can argue, and they do on the left, that the numbers are skewed because so many people are retiring. But the question is, are they retiring because they want to, or they have to because they can't get a job? And the second part of that is, yes, you have people retiring, but you also naturally have people entering the workforce, and they're having a hard time finding good jobs. So this has not been a good economy, and more regulation and higher taxes, Obamacare, et cetera, is not going to help employers want to employ more people.
Well, what type of impact will that have on the markets and everything else, since it seems the curtain has been removed?
Kevin, I was shocked at how strong the market was on Friday. You know, it did open down, and we talk about severely. It wasn't even down 1%, but you know, let's call it down over a little over 100 points. So the market was down initially, and then it kind of rallied back during the day. It never really took another spike down, as if the market was overly concerned that we're in a recession. But again, I don't think this was shocking to the overall stock market, in that whatever jobs numbers Washington, D.C. throws out, you know, 4.7 unemployment rate, which is just a laughable statistic. I have no idea why we even talk about this statistic anymore. It's so pointless and meaningless. We've known that for a long time, as any investor would, that the economy is not robust. It is not that strong. It's barely hanging on to positive growth. So this, I think, I was surprised it reacted as positively as it did. But again, I don't think the market was shocked that the economy is not booming.
I mean, do we really have a unified economic policy? We talk about, quantitative easing. Is that the term, right?
Yeah, QE.
QE, and you've discussed that again and again. But, you know, we have the interest rates that are artificially low. We're printing our own money. We've got the job reports that really aren't the job reports. And then we have this, you know, for people you know, getting ready for a vacation or the kids just getting out of school. How does this impact them, or does it, Dave?
Well, it does. As far as not having an economic policy, I don't know what this president's policy is on anything. Do you? I have no idea what his policy is. I don't know that he could articulate one. So, you think about this president versus other presidents from both sides. You could say, you know, what was President Reagan about? He believed in us as a people. He believed in getting government out of the way of the people. He believed in defeating communism. It's a simple thing. You could put his beliefs on a bumper sticker, so to speak, right? You could understand where he was coming from. This economic policy or lack of, and rulemaking. We've got the Department of Labor deciding what the financial institutions should do. This is a bizarro world. So, no, it's not anything you can articulate, and it affects everything. It doesn't affect it today. It affects the ability of businesses to say, I'm going to expand, I'm going to grow, I'm going to start a new business because I understand what's going on out there, and I think I can overcome whatever challenges and obstacles I have. Business hates, anybody would, saying, I think I'll expand and put my neck on the line. I think I'll start a business, but I don't really know what the government's going to do to me. I don't know what my taxes are going to be. I don't know what the regulations are going to be, but it'll be okay. Let's go ahead and expand. And people don't do that. And so we shouldn't be surprised when we don't understand what the heck somebody's doing. That we're not going to be seeing a lot of new businesses start up.
Dave Petzo with us here as we move along at 580 KIDO. Let's take a look before we get to some of the abstract issues that people have come to know and love here at 580 KIDO. Let's talk a little bit about locally where we are as far as the state economy. Obviously, people are very concerned next year when the federal subsidies go away from the Obamacare. The state has to pick that up, which means we're going to have to pick that up. I believe premiums in Idaho, it was judged to go up 25% this year. Horrible, but not as bad as Minnesota. So you take a look at the premiums next year. You as an employer, I mean, you're looking at it, and the employees are looking at adding more of a burden here.
It's unbelievable. The wonder of Obamacare is finally now starting to take hold. It's not because it isn't working. It never was going to work. This is when all the subsidies, as you point out, are going away. And so now the real cost of Obamacare is now going to be borne by the people who are using it or paying for it through employers, et cetera. So, and the states will have to pay for it. So all that nice free sign up and everybody will be happy talk. We're all in and we're going to bend the curve. They've bent the curve all right, but they've bent it straight up. We're talking about 45% increases in some places. That's unbelievable.
45%. So where does that money come from for families here in the Treasure Valley?
The governments are going to have to cut back. I mean, you look at it as a owner of the building we're in. I can't believe how high the property taxes are, right? I mean, that just goes into the coffers.
Well,
so we can do trains
on.
And things.
Nothing personal, but when you live in the city of trees or you have a business in the city of trees.
Unlike Meridian, is that what you're saying?
Or no, the People's Republic of Star with Russ Merge, Jim, the governor, and myself. But when you live, I mean, you have all these fancy bike lanes and you have all these things. You're right, my friend, you're paying for it.
I know.
The people here are paying for it. I mean, I think somebody was telling me they did their taxes and there's still like a tax from like 50 or 60 years ago.
Yep.
Just to keep paying for things that have already been paid for.
They are. It never goes away. Government never says, you know, we don't need this anymore. It's like a toll road, right? Once we paid for the toll road, do you think they're going to lift the toll?
But the usual suspects continue to get reelected. So
yeah.
You and others must like to pay those taxes. I'm glad you're funding the bike lanes and the little bikes and everything else. I mean,
oh, and the new trees. And yeah.
You know, it's as if the city of Boise has a money tree. And I guess you're funding it, so.
We are. And as part of the downtown district,
right.
We get to pay extra.
Well, you know, with that exclusive parking that we have.
Easy to park in downtown.
Right. We're getting new parking meters and such. It's a challenge, though, to run a business here in the city of Boise.
It is, and it's getting more challenging.
Right.
There absolutely is no end to how much money government spends and chooses to spend. They just, we have money. We need to spend it. They absolutely do that. And then when times get a little bit tougher, then they don't cut back. And then we wait for another good time and grow, and we grow the mill rate again on our property taxes. It gets out of sight. So, yeah.
Well, then again, and the costs have to be passed on to the consumer, mm-hmm. like we're seeing with medicine. And you take a look now, Dave Petzo, I need you to put on your analyst hat here at 580KIDO. Is there a better business to invest in right now? And again, for entertainment purposes only, for that, that's what this show is about, than the medical field. You take a look at all these hospitals being built, elaborate facilities in Nampa. I mean, Nampa's booming when it comes to hospitals.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
You have St. Luke's, you have St. Al's, and we're not talking about a doc in the box.
Nope.
And then, you know, under the radar, you have primary health care. They're in Garden City now. They're going to build one in Star. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, in Star, we've got, you know, Toontown has like a doc in the box or a nurse in the box. And they just built one in, you know, by Linder and Chinden, or I call it Chinder. They're just built. I mean, medicine, it seems to be what's going on here as far as growth.
It is.
So instead of being a lawyer, mm-hmm. let's all go be a doctor.
You know, not doctors, because doctors are being underpaid, particularly
right.
with
and
their skill level. But
and the huge
the
debt
hospital,
that they incur.
Absolutely. They're horribly underpaid. You know, people say, oh, they're horribly underpaid. I mean, can you imagine if you made $150,000 a year? $150,000 after you go to the 25th grade? That's not that good. It's not that good. And that's who we want. We want people to go to the 25th grade, right?
Look,
we want some of the best and brightest.
Speaking for myself, going to the 8th grade, $150,000 would be great.
but my point is that it's not the doctors. It's great to be in medicine and owning hospitals right now. But I will make this argument, just the same as the healthcare companies jumped in bed with Obamacare. Now they're jumping out of bed, right? You get in bed with the government, it isn't long before you are in trouble, and that is always the case. If that's what you rely on is your lobbying efforts, and you rely on the left wing or the right wing, you will die too someday.
Let me hit you with this, though. Dave Petzo with us. If you have a question about money, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Maybe you'd like to learn how to make money. Maybe Dave will tell us how to get rich quick. We're looking forward to that as well. You know, we talk about marketing. I was at a facility, wasn't a medical facility, but it was kind of similar to that. And they said, well, you know, you could do this or that. And I go, dude, you're upselling me. And they kind of laughed at it. But there was some truth to it as well when you're taking a look at, well, you know, well, we could do this procedure as well. And the ethical challenges. You know, I argue that education has become marketing. Mm-hmm. Well, you've got to go to this school and get this degree and that degree, and the student loans will pay for this. But where is the ethics? I mean, could fueling this growth be upselling?
Part of it is, and there's no question about that, Kevin. It's when procedures are free. I'll tell you what happened here. A couple of years ago, I had a knee surgery. I've never hit my deductible in my life. I've never used.
No whammies. Come on, deductible.
Yeah, right. And so now I hit it, right?
Yes!
Yay! So everything's free. So I'm turning around.
Woo-hoo!
And going, what do I do now? And
right.
So one of my close buddies is a doctor, and I said, so what else should I be doing? You know,
right.
Because it's like all free for the rest of the year.
Right.
And he says, there isn't anything.
Right.
I said, really? I mean, shouldn't I do a treadmill test, all these things? He said, no. I mean, no. No. And the answer is no. So when it's really, when people are, even I was saying, what else should I do because it's free?
Now,
when
wait
people
a minute.
Have free.
You were taking advantage of the system. Dave Petzo, for over, what, 25 years? You've been preaching, you know, take advantage of it. You were tempted.
I was tempted.
Wow.
I was looking for what kind of things should I be doing.
And
right?
We see that all the time now.
Everybody. If you don't pay something as you go,
right.
Even if it's not all of it, you say, oh, we got to pay all the. No, it shouldn't be free. I've always argued, always have. I don't care if you have no money, you bring a chicken in to the doctor. You have to pay something.
Hey, I got a little surprised the other day. My even though I haven't made my deductible, my EKG a couple months ago was picked up, so my copay paid for the EKG. I thought
get
I was going to get
here.
Yeah, it was a good deal.
You
know, those EKGs, it costs a lot of money to put you up to that
laptop.
It's
good to have group health insurance, isn't it?
I suppose. It was a lot better about 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
I know. But, you know, I have to go to $5,000 before I have anything paid.
So. I'm at $6,000.
You're at $6,000?
Yes.
But they picked this up.
Yeah. For some reason, that seemed to be covered.
That's one of your... Huh.
So now we've learned something about Kevin Miller and EKGs. More coming up about money with Dave Pezzo next on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
And welcome back, 580 KIDO. Dave Pezzo with us, Kevin Miller in the morning on Idaho's Talk Station. So, for the markets, what do we have to look forward to this summer? I know it's going to be dead, but we've got the jobs report, we've got Obamacare, we've got an election. Historically, what does that mean for people that nervously look at their 401ks and their IRAs day in and day out?
Yeah, Kevin, it's always a fight for people to get their eyeballs off of their statements. It always is, because when we think about this, there's never been a time where it's like, it's all clear. It's all clear. It's all good. It's no problem here. The only time I can remember that, and I'm not just cherry picking times, but truly, we all have to remember the late 90s was a time where everybody was a stock investor. Everybody was all in.
Wall Street.
It was.
Michael Douglas.
Absolutely. It was the time.
Right.
It was nobody worried about stocks.
What were you doing then?
I was owning stocks.
You were Michael Douglas. You were flying on the big planes.
Yeah.
Greed is good. Maybe that was the 80s. I'm dating myself.
Oh, first class everywhere we flew. Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Bright lights, big city.
Oh, yeah.
Dave Pezzo. By the way, you can catch Dave Saturdays, 8 to 10 here at 580 KIDO, anytime at the Pezzo Center, Pezzo Financial. And you give out your email quite a bit on the show. What's your email if people want to get a hold of you?
Anytime, right to our website is PetzoFinancial.com. But also our live one is Dave@PetzoFinancial.net.
Yeah, I had to almost ask the follow-up because I don't think you were going to divulge that one.
I did, though.
Yeah. See, I'm an award winner. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. You hold people accountable. We hold people accountable. So the markets do as well. You're a very big fan of that. So the summer, what should we be looking forward to?
Well, right now, it's the same thing all the time. There's always lots and lots to worry about. But again, we do this on steroids now, right, Kevin? I mean, we do it through social media. We have news everywhere, news feeding all the time. And as you and I talk all the time, over 90% of it is negative. So to think you can take and input more and more and more negativity but feel good about things is crazy. And so the reality is for most people, you just simply have to tune it out, turn it off, and go buy out putting your money away on a regular basis like you always have, and keep it invested. Quit trying to guess what the market's going to do. It's been a fool's errand, and it will continue to be. You just cannot time the market. So thinking about this, what are we looking for this summer? I would look for continued strength in the market because nobody expects it.
Now, you're always saying continued strength in the market.
I do not always say that. I do say this, that the market goes to all-time highs, it corrects, and then it goes back to all-time highs, and then it corrects again and again and again, and trying to outgain that has been silly.
Does the election play into this at all? You know, we talk about this at 580 KIDO. You talk about it. Does the election, you know, people say, well, if a Republican gets in, the market reacts this way.
Yep.
A Democrat, the market reacts this way. It's kind of hard to tell who the real Hillary Clinton is.
Right.
Many people believe that she's pandering to the left and saying that she's going to be the third Obama term. But in reality, she will govern much closer to a Republican, as her husband did, than the current occupant. If that happened, I mean, you've got the crystal ball. How do you see a Clinton v. Trump administration?
I think Donald Trump is going to be very good for the economy, to be frank.
You weren't a fan of Mr. Trump.
No, I was not a fan of
Mr. Trump. I'd like to remind people of that.
I'm not personally a fan of Mr. Trump.
Well,
I think
he might not be a fan of yours either.
I'm quite sure he wouldn't be.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think I've been a fan of his. I don't watch his reality program. I never have. I've not been a big fan of Donald Trump. But the reality is I think that we need a complete overhaul in Washington, D.C. And that's why I think he's the only guy that would do that.
Let me hit you with this, though.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we take a look at Donald Trump, a man who has bragged about bankruptcies, has this ongoing federal lawsuit. If you read some of the reports about Trump University, some tough issues here with the bait and switch and the credit cards and running these things up. Do you believe, though, and let's take out Congress, let's take out everything that, if he becomes the commander in chief, is that really good for the country, considering Mr. Trump says, well, if we default, we default. What would the impact of those statements be? And personally, I'm a fan of tariffs. Your blood's rising already. I'm down with hitting the Chinese like they hit us.
Yep.
But putting that into practice, your thoughts on Trump's economic program that you said was okay, but getting into specifics here.
Yeah, no, more specifically, no, I think the idea of not having free trade is unnerving to me. It's one of the reasons that the world grows as fast as it does when countries are doing what they're economically best at and not, you know, helping out those industries that aren't doing a good job. So I do think that free trade is the biggest issue on my plate. As far as the rest of it goes, I think we need somebody to take a hard look at from a business perspective. Washington, D.C. is broken, and all they do is spend more money breaking it more. And I think somebody like him could come in and just turn it upside down.
But you know something, there's no accountability. Boy, don't we sound like a couple curmudgeons here.
Yeah.
You are accountable. You know, I was talking to a young lady over the weekend about this, and we were talking about you ever watch that show Parade of Homes on Channel 5 Plus 1?
I know it's there, but
okay.
Yeah,
yeah. It's been there for years. 5 Plus 1, they do the Parade of Homes, very well-written show. And after watching all the Sunday shows, I need to see about the houses in the foothills and the ranches in Meridian and all these things. I kind of live vicariously through that. And I was talking to Dorothy, and she said, you know, how do people afford these homes? And I said, you know, she goes, you know, you have people that come here from California, they bought low and sell high. And I get that. But when we're talking about continued growth,
yep,
with these homes, we're talking million-dollar homes.
Yep.
I saw a home in Boise, $1.2 million. The other issue here that I brought up, and this is something that you and I talk about, is you have people that, you know, have worked honorably for 20 or 30 years.
Yep.
Gotten a big pension. Sometimes six figures.
Yep.
That doesn't work in your world. Doesn't work in my world.
Nope.
And we're supporting that.
Yep.
And that infrastructure is failing.
And here's the good news. And those people may live to be 130 years old.
I know you're a big fan of living to 100. I personally, not me, but
if you're healthy.
Look, health is a relative term. You have people that chewed tobacco for all their lives and lived to 110. I don't know if that's true. I just said it for. However, all joking aside, that's a great deal. And as I said to Dorothy, look, I'm all for people that put in their time and,
yep,
and did it honorably. On the other hand, to retire in your 40s or 50s, making in excess of six figures, which a lot of folks, the majority of the people in America don't make six figures.
That's right.
And then to go get another job, okay, I like the Golden Corral,
yep,
but I mean, enough is enough.
Right. I know. I agree. And I think, you know, this is not popular because I, just like everybody else, appreciate what the vets have done and the people in the military and protecting us. I really do. But you can't start retiring people at 45 years old. You just can't do it. We can't do it as a society when people are living to be 100 years old plus. And I don't mean that that's rare. We all know, all the scientists know, all the doctors know, that we are pushing back the boundaries so fast now. The growth in our life expectancies is exponential now. It's not a question of, am I going to get Alzheimer's when I'm 90 years old? If you're 50 years old now, I don't think there's any chance that we won't be treating it by then. So all these things are we're blowing out those barriers, and that just means more and more time. But, Kevin, we also have the firemen and police officers that are able to retire in their early 50s now too, and this is going to be an issue as we roll forward.
Well, and you see it in other states that have this thing called legacy cost.
Mm-hmm.
But again, and I don't think that you can reform the system because those folks vote, they put in their time, and you know, it's kind of like Donald Trump. We can sit there and rip him for what he is, but he figured out the system.
Yep.
And they figured out the system.
That's right. They have. And it's just, I was talking with a police officer about this, about the problem, and of how in the world are we going to be able to afford this? And he said, I don't know. I don't know how we're going to, because these are healthy people typically.
Right.
And they are going to live a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And getting out when they're 50 years old is just not something the system can do. Well, anyway, we were talking about this, and he says, I said, so how do you reform? He says, I don't know how you do, to your point.
Right.
He says, you want to go up against the firefighters? If you're a politician, it ain't going to fly. Everybody loves the firefighter because they're the guys that come and pick up your uncle. They're the guys that say that took him to the hospital. They're the guys that come in.
They're the guys that drive the big truck to the store with the gas.
Yeah.
Just to make sure the truck works, yeah.
Yeah, but it is, they're the paramedics. They're the ones out there, and they are saving lives. There's no doubt about it. It's just, but you go up against them, you will lose.
All right, Dave Pezzo here, just full of good news today. Kevin Miller in the morning on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO. So we take a look at locally.
Mm-hmm.
Anything going on in the summer here locally?
No. This is just time when we have a lot of people who are coming into the area to come visit this beautiful state. There's no question that tourism picks up and should. I mean, goodness. You know, all we do, we turn 55 into a parking lot, right?
Yeah, I'm still very concerned about the planning and the resources. We have a finite amount of resources here with water and everything else. And we had Roger Batt on last week discussing the Treasure Valley water issues. But, mm-hmm. you know, we could... Yesterday or Saturday, leaving the show, I'm on Myrtle and it's a parking lot.
Yeah.
Because they were doing construction.
Yep.
It's almost as if between the bike lanes and the construction, we didn't have any problems, so we create our own.
There is. I saw this in downtown, right? Because I've talked about this before, right? We took down Main Street,
right?
And from three lanes to two. And,
yes.
And we had that experiment. Nobody liked it. I mean, nobody liked it, right? So they got rid of it. And then it comes back, and they're going to do it again. Well, apparently, though, this time enough people came out and said, wait, I mean, how many times are you going to keep trying to do the same thing? So I do agree, Kevin, that there are issues with people in government deciding they are simply going to go do stuff. And it does narrow down the lanes. But let's face it, this is pretty cool that Boise is growing as much as it is, and people are – there's a lot of job creation here in Boise, and that's a fabulous thing.
Dave Pezzo, tip of the week?
Tip of the week. Interest rates declined again. So if you have really been procrastinating on a refi, they collapsed last week, and that will have a good impact.
Okay, final thought, part 75. Valuations are going up. I got my taxes. Home ownership or home value of your home is going up. Remarkably well here in the Treasure Valley.
It is, and it's all that means you're going to pay more taxes, Kevin. It just doesn't really matter until
you
die.
But your home's appreciating.
Right, until you die, when are you going to tap into that?
You talk to some bankers all the time.
Or unless you're going to move to Burley.
Hey, that might be next. Burley in the morning. Good morning, Burley. Dave Pezzo, thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Enjoy it always.
You're listening to Kevin Miller on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's Talk Station. This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
Hello and good morning. Hey, we've got something special in the second hour. It is special to me for sure. I just enjoyed doing it. Don Connolly will be in the second hour. He's been in the industry for like 50 years. He's still traveling around and teaching, if you will, teaching advisors to communicate better. And I just tell you a quick story with this. Obviously, back when you're 19, 20 years old, you are just barely surviving. And it was 1980s, early 80s in Boise. So it was a gruesome time. For those of you who remember interest rates at 20% plus, and when interest rates finally started to fall, we thought we were all happy with 10, 12%. It was a very difficult environment. And so Don Connolly, in those days, you know, you'd get a cassette tape once a month, and on one side would be somebody with some, with an economic perspective, Dr. Bob, and then on the other side was Don Connolly, and I just wore those tapes out. I mean, every month when they would come, they just try to keep you focused on something down the road that would get better than what was happening right now. So it was an important part of my life for sure. And I saw him again. I didn't realize he was still out there speaking. And then found out, talked with him and said, yeah, let's do the radio program. And the answer was yes. So that's going to be in the second hour, and I hope you enjoy that. right now, it's an interesting, we've got a few minutes left here today. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with interest rates, because it is absolutely fascinating. And I know, and fearful, right? I mean, everybody's scared, and I mean everybody has an opinion as to why the world is ending. And they do. You just don't hear the dialogue of this is okay, this we'll get past this. The choruses of those who are predicting, as Bill Gross said, a supernova and or some kind of crash, calamity, can't do it, can't, you know, pushing on a thread, all those things that this is a have been describing what the central bankers around the world are doing as they've dropped interest rates. But it's now the bond market has gone negative on several trillion dollars. We've talked about this before in Europe. It's not new. But what is new is an accelerated drop in bond rates. And as we look at, if we could just take a step back, I'm not here to say anything except this is what my quick take is, and I mean quick. It's not a big thorough, gee, I'm an economist and I got it all figured out and I spent the weekend or all week looking at blogs. I've been at a conference this week, and it's astounding how many things there are to worry about in the world, right? It's a big list of things. And we're all worried about it. So therefore, we have things like negative interest rates as people plow into bonds. Bonds, willing to lose a little bit of money now because of the fear of a bigger drop. Which is interesting. We went through this in 08, 9, and 10, at times with the European crisis, 11 as well, even in the spring of 12. And the market was fine. It righted itself. Because negative real interest rates and negative interest rates, absolute interest rates, are not an acceptable path to a 7 or 8% return for the pension fund you're running. Money has to be invested and will be. Has to. And as more and more people are preparing for the great calamity, you wind up with so much cash parked in the sidelines, it's very difficult for the markets to even fall. More than a little bit. So we, for the last little bit, that's what we've had, right? We've had corrections. This is mild, 5%. Even we had one 10% correction in, like, you know, 3 years. That's it. And people, oh, the volatility is really off the charts. It's just like we've just said volatility. We just talk like that without any real thought. Is it volatile? No, it's not. It's actually less volatile than it has been historically. Really, it has. Market from peak to trough for the last 4 years has had lower peak to trough drops than it has historically. The average is 14%, by the way, and we haven't hit 14% for over 4 years now. Peak to trough. But we all just say that, right? It's like, and the market's all about oil. We all just say that. Is that true? No, of course it's not true. That's just idiotic. Well, it's all about the dollar. It is today, but it won't be tomorrow. It was yesterday, but it's not now. I mean, it's just this constant, like, it's all about this, all about that. Like, it's like you got it all gamed. You had it all figured out. And we don't. And I don't know how this ends. It seems really weird. And the fears are real. But it seems to me that's all we ever focus on is fear. What's going to go wrong? What can go wrong? And I saw it on the main platforms, too. And I think that, so my take is this. We focus on the reaction of markets because it's instantaneous. And to focus on, and there was a general there that ran the Afghan campaign. And pardon me, I just can't think of his name right now. But he spoke. And wow. No wonder he's a general. I mean, seriously. The command of the room was extraordinary. It really was. And, but anyway. Isn't it funny how people can just kind of sometimes open their mouth for just a couple sentences, and it's like, oh, he's clearly the leader of the entire, like, room or area or world. It was very interesting to me. But anyway, super smart, thoughtful guy, obviously has been through a lot of campaigns, 45 years in the military, and just gave a laundry list of fears. Not sure, as somebody said, well, what do we take from this? As a questioner asked, I thought it was a brilliant question. She asked, what do we take from this? I mean, is this worse? Where do you put it on the needle? Are we at a 10? You're more worried than ever? And the answer was, on some things, yes. The retreat from the Middle East, the retreat of the United States from around the world, in his opinion, is the most dangerous thing right now. There's several things, and I'll cover them, but that is one. And so when we think about that, we think, okay, so why do I feel so discombobulated? Because I maybe not a great word for it, but why do we just feel out of sorts? Why do we feel like it's not right? Like the country's on the wrong track. The economy's not good. There's no rule of law. The moral compass is broken. It just goes, the list goes on, right? And we take all of these and we extrapolate them into, it can't work out economically. And I think that's a natural tendency for us. So my take of this is that, what's going on with this? I don't know. It's just, it's so bizarre. Like, if we can somehow drive it further below zero, that's good. How? Why? And we've never done this before. Scary, scary. And it's an easy thing to pick on because none of us knows how it's going to work out, and it does seem weird, and it doesn't seem to be working at all. So all these things taken together, to me, we've got insurmountable problems, and some of them are insurmountable. You can't change the demographics of the fact that the Muslim world is populating very quickly and the rest of the world's not. And you have completely incompetent regimes all through the Middle East, all through Asia. They can't possibly handle millions and millions of unemployed, angry young men that are easily militarized, turned into crazies, because they've got no hope. That's a tough one. It's a tough one. It is a very, 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 very scary world. How do markets react? Whenever we have interest rates that fluctuate, like they did this past couple of weeks, that's another sign the world is ending, and that's what the market commentators talk about. They go, aha, see, the people who have a lot of cash or underinvested or the bears, they can't stand it because they've been watching the market do okay, and their world-ending predictions have not come true. As a matter of fact, the market has gone up 300% since the bottom. Pretty good move. It's hard to be sitting in cash. And when we have so much money earning zero or negative rates, not even including the effects of inflation, it's daunting as money managers to sit there and not invest that money. So it is. There's so much powder dry on the sidelines. It's hard to see the markets fall very much. And I'm not saying we're not going to have some kind of event that really does knock it. I don't know. Those are the things you can't predict. Never can. Never could. People do all the time. And they're wrong all the time. But that kind of powder dry keeps markets buoyant, much more so than you would think. All right, we have to take a quick break. If you have a quick question, shoot us a call. Second hour, I've got a great recording for you. But do it right now. 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
All Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us. Hey, we're going to run out of time here in a couple minutes, so I'm going to hold this email that came in from Fred, but I will tell you it's good because it's a good one for how do we get into the growing dividends market, right? Is there a better way than anyway? It's a very thoughtful email, Fred, thinking through the costs of doing it through mutual funds. What's the best way to do it? And since I believe that should be the core of your portfolio, I think it's a great time for us to address that next week in our education segment. So we'll talk about that next week. So thank you very much for your email question. I'll hang on to that, and we'll get to that next week. All right, in the meantime, I'm going to have to roll out of here. I hope you guys have a great weekend. I hope you enjoy John Connolly. It really, anyway, it's a blast from the past listening to him for me, but he's really got a lot of wisdom. So I hope you enjoy. We'll talk to you next week.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. Of course, I'm Dave Pezzo, and we are here to teach you a little bit about Social Security. A lot of people think about Social Security only as, let me hurry and go get my money out. Let me go ahead and rush to retire at 62. It's interesting in the United States that most people retire at age 62, and that's pretty easy to understand why. That's when Social Security starts to pay out. But with literally hundreds of potential options, does that make sense? For people to take money out at 62 with 30-plus year life expectancies? Probably not. Probably it's very dangerous to be thinking that way at all. And yet what most people do is they don't consult about this. They don't think about it. They just walk in and say, I got to go get my check. Or the consulting they do perhaps is in the coffee shop with their well-known Social Security buddy, experts to tell them what they should do. That makes no sense when we're talking about what potentially could for most families be hundreds of thousands of dollars and value in the millions of dollars. This is a very serious and very difficult topic that has so much misrepresentation out there in the world that I am very thrilled that we have Elaine Simmons with us, who is a long time, 35-year public servant with Social Security. Ran, I believe, four or five different offices in the Southeast for several years and is now traveling around the country with Fidelity Investments. So very pleased to have you, Elaine. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So did I say anything wrong in that wrap-up? Should we all just grab our money at age 62 and run before they kill Social Security, before it ends, before they take it all away?
No, you are right on track with that. In fact, I am generally not an advocate of taking a benefit at 62 at all. There will be some exceptions because there's exceptions to every rule. But what I encourage people to do is really take ownership of this Social Security program. We've paid into the system 25, 30, 40 years of our lifetime. And yet we have that mindset, take the money and run. And it's like you said, when we're planning retirement with Social Security, we will listen to what a stranger tells us, rather than taking the time to find the basics. Now, as your listeners can tell, I'm not from Idaho. I do have a little bit of an accent here. I'm from the southeastern United States. My mother is from Canada. My grandmother is from Ireland. There's a wonderful Irish expression that says, I'm often wrong, but I'm never in doubt.
Good.
I want to turn that around and tell you right now that when your friends talk with you about Social Security, they are always wrong, but they're never in doubt. And you're making a decision that will impact you or your spouse for 25 to 30 years.
Willy-nilly, listen to your buddies who are not in doubt at a coffee shop.
That's right.
Remarkable. Really, when you think about it. For example, you think about it this way. What is the value of something that pays out, I don't know, to a family, say, between husband and wife, $4,000 a month?
Well, you're talking about well over $1 million in assets.
Exactly.
And yet we will listen to a stranger. And I see this all the time because I think I have an invisible tattoo on me that says, talk about Social Security around me. Mm-hmm. I'll be sitting at a Barnes & Noble. I'll be in line at the movie theaters. And I'll listen to people talking about Social Security, one telling the other something that is totally wrong. And you know I'll take a step forward, and friends who are with me will reach out and pull me back and say, you don't have a dog in that fight. We are moving on. You're not the Social Security savior. but it is troubling the way we look at Social Security. We don't take the time to have a plan, have a strategy for our life.
Which is really astounding when you put it in what the value is. And then, therefore, are you going to go out and just listen to your buddies in a coffee shop as you make a $1.4 million decision about an investment?
I agree. This is a major, major decision.
Yeah, we do see that, and it's fascinating. I'll give you a quick story, and then you can tell me how do we go about changing this dynamic, okay? But we have people come in periodically. We had one come in, I'm going to say 2 months ago, came into our office, had already made the decision at 62 to start it. Here's the good news. He'd only started it 3 months ago, which means he can pay it back, no problem. Literally arguing with us about why he shouldn't. I said, you're just saying, we just want to evaluate this. He doesn't want to evaluate it. He just wants his money. How do you change the dynamic where people are that certain, to your Irish saying, they're that certain about a decision that they really know nothing about?
Well, that's where I find that if you have a common sense approach and you have a solid conversation with the individual, 95% of the people that I talk with do a 180-degree turnaround when you can sit down and not only talk with them, but show them the numbers. Mm-hmm. Now, I have found that I am a numbers person. Over 30 years ago, my job with Social Security was back in the days when we figured the benefit amounts manually.
Yeah.
We use those big, ugly calculators bigger than a shoebox. But in order to get the job, you went through 8 to 10 weeks training of actually figuring everything manually. So when I talk with people about their options, the average couple really needs to understand they can have 3 to 7 different options on how to take their benefits. The maximum solid options I've come up with is 10. The maximum combined amount I've come up with for a couple is $6,884 a month. And I start out telling people, I'm not telling you what to do, but I am saying make an informed decision and look at the numbers. Because with Social Security benefits, the emotions get in the way. The numbers don't lie. So if you start with the base option and build upon that, and you do give information about a break-even point, but you go beyond a break-even point, because the biggest misconception today is people say, well, my break-even point will put me at age 78 or age 79. Mm-hmm. And my response to that is, and? Mm-hmm. You'll probably still be going strong.
Right.
And recently I had a man in Birmingham, Alabama say, but Elaine, no man in my family has ever lived to 70, ever. Surely you'll tell me I can take my benefit at 62. So then my response to him was, how about the women in your wife's family? How long do they live? Now, this is a Southern man. He looked at me and he said, baby, they never die. I said, well, let me tell you something. I would kill you before you made it to the Social Security office at age 62. Because if you take that 25% reduction in benefits, not only is that the rest of your life, but if you're the one with a higher benefit amount, mm-hmm. you've just locked in the maximum widow's benefit payable for the rest of the life of your surviving spouse. With Social Security benefits, we tend to make a decision, what if I die? And my response to that is, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter then.
Right.
Should be, what if I live? So when you have that common sense conversation, you show them the numbers. And we're not telling someone you have to keep working till you're 66 or 70. We're saying have a plan or a strategy with your resources. Sometimes maybe it's part-time work. I'm a little more concerned with my guaranteed income in my mid-70s and my 80s. Than in my 60s.
Right, right. And there's a lot of different factors out there. So I can hear people saying along the same lines, okay, fine, you're talking about the numbers, you want to look at the numbers. I'll tell you some numbers, okay? Okay, Elaine, let me tell you some numbers, okay?
Okay.
This is a busted system. This is broke. They're going to take my money away. I saved and I tried to save for my family. Here's what I'm convinced. It's going to be down the road, they're going to take my money away in the form of taxation or some kind of means testing. It's the only way they can save this system. I want my money now.
Oh, and you know, I hear that all the time. And my response to that is, yes, Social Security does have a solvency issue. But quite frankly, the only reason you know about it now is it's happening on your watch. Think about it. If you weren't retirement age now, would you even know that there was a solvency issue? Back in the late 70s, early 80s, there was the same situation, just as critical, when the Greenspan Commission was appointed. We had major changes then. We raised full retirement age from 65, graduating it up to 67. We stopped student benefits through college. We introduced a lot of other changes. There is a solvency issue, mm-hmm. but we need to make some serious changes to this program, because Social Security benefits were never meant to be payable 25 to 30 years in our lifetime. Now, I'm Irish. My life expectancy is 96 years old.
You
think
must
about
not be
this.
The Irish that I know that spend most of the time at the pub.
That strengthens us. That does strengthen us. But if I'm going to live to be 96, I have a 33-year-old son who will easily live to be 120 years old. So with that in mind, yes, there's a solvency issue, but the changes we need to make don't have to be that dramatic. The number one resource, if you will Google the Social Security Fix-It book, and follow the link to the Retirement Center at Boston College. This is a nonpartisan study, 35, 40 pages, 10 to 12 lines per page, stick figure in color. What do we need to do? Mm-hmm. This is written for our generation. If Social Security benefits are not here in 3 to 5 years, I want you to think about it, because this is what I hear from people. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll be here in 3 to 5 years. If they're not, where do you think this country will be economically? Because one in every six people in this country receives a Social Security benefit, whether it's retirement, disability, or survivor. Pull that money out of the economy, and the economic impact will be huge. Mm-hmm. Do you really think your private pension will be there, or your resources? I'm going for Social Security. Now, will there be changes? Yes, and there need to be. They are long overdue. And frankly, I think we need to reevaluate the system every 10 years. I'm a number one advocate. Anyone born after 1960, moving up their full retirement age. Their full retirement age now is 67. I think we need to be moving that on up again a little bit. I think we need to change the calculation of future benefits, because the benefit really should reflect what we've paid in and what we're going to receive over a lifetime. And then, quite frankly, take a look at your statement and look at the amount of money you've really paid in. It may be anywhere from $130,000 to $230,000, you and your employer. And then the changes, and we can talk about a few other changes, but there's some basics right now.
You know, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break, because I want to get into this a little bit more, and then we're going to talk about some of the calculators and things like that, which really speak to that. But I think a lot of people are very discouraged about the tone in D.C. to get some of the changes that mm-hmm. really have been proposed under Bush. Tried to. I'll never forget watching the State of the Union address when half of the House was applauding that nothing was done on Social Security, as if that was a proud moment for them. I don't understand that kind of lack of leadership, and it is very disturbing. It does not lead us to think, especially after we've seen this administration continue to ignore the problem.
I agree totally.
And
that's why I think
it's becoming an enormous concern for people. So what's going to happen to me? Maybe not in 5 years, because it won't die in 5 years. But are they going to confiscate because I've taken care of myself? We'll talk about that after this break, okay? All right, you're listening to Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, and I'm here with Elaine Simmons, who is traveling around the country with Fidelity Investments. as a Social Security expert. Not that she's pretending to be one. She's the real deal. 35 years with the Social Security Administration, and we're just very, very privileged to have her here. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KITO.
Hello and welcome back to Money Matters. Again, this is a special recording with Don Connolly, and I just have to tell you again, this is it's an honor, it's a privilege. Whenever somebody is in the industry for a long, long time, and they're teaching in that industry, and that's what Don Connolly is a teacher, you gain a certain wisdom. You gain an ability to take complex subjects and make them into something that average people can understand. And like all industries, our industry has a huge, overwhelming, stupid vocabulary designed solely to make sure the average person has no idea what the heck's going on. And Don has made a career of tearing that apart. And I go all the way back to my early days, 30, 35 years ago, when I wore out the tapes with he and Dr. Bob driving around just trying to find a human being that was willing to give me time. And so I appreciate that from my background, Don. You helped a young guy survive in the early phases of a difficult industry, for sure.
Thanks.
Thank you. Now, on to, I can't quite get away from investor behavior, but I want to shift a little bit here. And let's talk about, you know, in our industry years ago, the end of regulated commissions was the end of our industry. The advent of fee-only was going to be the end of all of the brokerage houses. And now the computer-driven discount brokers were going to wipe everybody out, and now we've got robos. Now, I'm just kind of curious from your perspective, what do you think the outlook of the industry is over the next 20 and 50 years?
I think it's robust. People always need advice.
Yeah.
And as long as people need advice, we'll be fine. We'll be fine as an industry. You know, and people don't normally do things for themselves that are beyond their comprehension. Investing is very, very complex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something you want to try on your own. You know, do not do this at home kind of thing.
Right.
So I think it's fine. I mean, you know, we've changed. We've changed from high commissions to low commissions. We've changed from low commissions now to fees. Now, the delivery is different, but the advice is there. So the question is, do you want advice? And the answer is yeah. Like, I got a friend who's a retina surgeon. He got up in the middle of the night recently. A patient was on Medicaid. And he went to the emergency room and reattached a retina and got $65 net, after all expenses were paid.
Hmm.
I have a friend who's a colorectal surgeon. He does appendicitis stuff for $200.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, things change. Life changes.
Yeah.
But, in the Midwest, the price of wheat's the same as it was 30 years ago, probably. But technology's allowed us to harvest more.
Right.
It changes. But the bottom line is that I think if we focus on the things that change, it's going to change our map. Because there's so much change, politically, socially, economically, in our business. We have to focus on the things that don't change. And the two things never change. One is every client has goals. And generally, they're pretty simple goals. I want to educate my kids, pay the minimal amount of taxes I have to pay, and retire comfortably. That never changes. And the other thing that never changes, every financial advisor has to make a living. That's a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty good pact, the two of them, the client and the advisor. So I advise every advisor to go in the morning and focus on your client's goals. Everything else is white noise.
Right.
The election, Hillary, Donald, ISIS, terrorism, it's white noise.
Right.
We've got to get through life because if we don't take care of ourselves, no one's going to take care of us. Everyone listening to this radio program, everyone knows somebody who's living on family, friends, or charity.
Right.
Nobody listening wants to move in with their kids when they're 75 years old. Nobody. And I talk to people, I live in Florida. I talk to people that are retired comfortably. I say, what's the biggest single pot? It's never 401k. It's never Social Security. It's always my personal savings.
Hmm.
So Social Security will get you by, 401k will get you by to a point. But you don't want to lose your dignity. So you got to take care of yourself. Now, maybe I'm speaking like an old guy. It's generational, maybe. But I don't want to go through life depending on somebody else. And I'm not sure your listeners do either.
I hope
so
you're
we
not
need advice.
Generational.
We need advice.
Yeah.
And we'll pay for advice if it's good advice, not cheap advice. The fastest growing industry in America is cheap advice.
Mm.
You can go on WebMD and cure yourself. I don't suggest you do that.
Yes, it's a good empowerment tool, but it is certainly, I would hope, is not the end-all, be-all for most people.
No, my sister-in-law got breast cancer. She went on the Internet for a long time, but that's information. It's not knowledge.
Right.
It's not wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
It's information.
Right.
All the information's out there. But, you know, the information was out there, David, during the tech bubble problem several years ago.
Yep.
The information was all there. People still got blown up because they don't know what to do with the information.
Right.
And that's the advisor's role. To take that information and put it in a mill and grind out wisdom.
Mm-hmm. So are we, as an industry, Don, are we getting better? Are we getting better? Or is it the same old? A few really great advisors and a mass of not so good.
Well, I think it's getting better. But I can tell you, as I enter my 50th year this fall, investors make the same mistakes today, David, they made when I started 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Always the same mistakes. So, and I think advisors do too. So, yeah, we're getting better. We're getting more refined. But, okay. it's a constant struggle, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been told every generation for years is going to save more than the last. Let me rephrase this. Every generation thinks it's smarter than the generation that came before it mm-hmm. and wiser than the generation that's coming after it.
Right.
So every generation I've been hearing since I was 21 years old, this generation is going to save money. Well, you know what? It's never happened yet. Savings rates are no more than they were 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to raise kids. We don't buy sneakers. We buy Reeboks and Adidas and Nike. We buy name brand this, name brand that. That stuff adds up. 1 year of college is the cost of a good car. It's hard to save money.
Mm-hmm.
And people care more in a lot of cases. A lot of people I know care more about what they're driving and what they're wearing than they do about their retirement because they can't see down the road. It's called temporal myopia. I can't see far ahead. If we could see down the road, nobody'd smoke, nobody'd drink, right?
Right.
But we can't see down the road. So we're getting better, you and I, in the industry, with those folks who want help. But we can't go out there and force feed this stuff. Hopefully more and more people are turning to professional help. Because, yeah, what we do is a lot better than what it used to be, much more sophisticated.
Right.
We just got to get the people. If that all makes sense, what I'm trying to say, get people coming to us.
Yeah.
So what we do, yes, much, much better. Our ability to affect people, I don't know.
Yeah.
People are determined to drive that new car and take that vacation and live in that new house. They don't want to see to save money, you have to sacrifice. Yeah. Not a lot of, you give a young child a cookie. Say, don't eat that. I'll give you another one in 20 minutes. Well, gone.
Yeah, I like those studies. They're very, very strong human nature, right from children.
Yeah, well, they're investor studies. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So how do we change that? How do we do that?
Now for a reward you simply cannot visualize. That's a tough challenge.
Yeah. So how do you stop people from stopping the game, though, right? I mean, you've said that several times today and always.
Bottom line, you could do everything for your clients except make decisions. You can't do that. You can't decide for them.
Right.
So I try to appeal to their common sense, the reason. But I can't make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. If you get out of two colleges and one's $10,000 and one's $40,000 a year, what are you going to do? You can't. Someone's going to decide which college they want to go to. It's their decision, right?
Right. Right. Well, if they can pay the bill,
it is. We can do everything but decide. And people have to suck it up and make decisions. One of these is take care of yourself. I'll tell you, if you don't take care of yourself, I say it before, nobody else is going to take care of you. When you're 65, the milkman doesn't care what your problems are.
Mm-hmm.
Bank wants their check for the mortgage, whatever it is. It's no mercy.
It's true. That is true.
So take care of yourself is the number one rule. And do it with an advisor, someone who's experienced at this. You know, I'll tell you one more thing.
Yep.
People say to me, I'm going to set up a retirement plan. I say, well, let me ask you a question. When's the last time in your life you did something for the first time and got it right? Mm. And that answer is never, right?
Right.
I say, you're about to retire for the first time. And you don't get it right, you're hawking your future.
Yeah.
You better get an advisor who's retired 200 times so you can retire once.
Great, great analogy. Yep. Absolutely. All right, on a final thought here, any other thoughts, Don? How do we do this? I mean, what do you kind of keep in front with, when people ask you, how do I stay in when the market's down 50%? How am I supposed to make that decision when,
you know,
maybe I am
retired?
It all
boils down to one simple word, David, and that word is trust. Do you trust your advisor?
Yeah.
Can you hold your advisor's hand and jump? Can you do that? Because I think for most part, clients don't want information. They want someone they can trust. So the advisor has to earn the trust, and the client has to invest his or her trust in that advisor. And once the trust is there, you just close your eyes and go for it. It's no different. When we have surgery, we don't give ourselves a medical degree. We trust the doctor.
Right.
And it's the same thing. The most important ingredient in our business is trust. And it's just, trust me, it's going to work out.
That's good.
And trust is not casual. Trust is irrational. You know, a mother walking down the street, Sun Valley, Idaho, with a newborn child or an infant who has to tie her shoes, not going to hand that baby to a stranger, but
right.
to hand the baby to a fireman. Why? Well, I trust firemen. Why? I don't know. I just trust firemen. It's irrational. It's nonlinear.
Yeah, that's true.
But the advisor has to earn that trust. And right. that's how you help people best, by earning their trust and having them believe in you.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. And I this is something that kind of is a blast from the past for me. I am going to spend the next hour here with Don Connolly. And that may not be a household word, but it in our industry, it is. Don has been around the industry forever. I thought I was around for a long time. But you see, the thing about Don that he doesn't know this, but years ago, when I was trying to cut my teeth and I would drive all the way across the state to find somebody that might even actually talk to me, and so I was on the road every week. And in that those days, there was no satellite radio. I wouldn't have been able to afford it anyway. But once a month, we would get this tape. Yes, the old days, you know, cassette tapes, would show up in the mail. And on one side was Dr. Bob. He was this economist, and he would talk for like 30 minutes. And on the other side was Don Connolly. And I'd wear out every single month that issue. So you just plug it in, you'd turn it over, you'd plug it in and turn it over, because in parts of our state, of course, as you know, there's not even really much more than an AM radio that you could pick up on the drive. So years ago, this was a guy I'm listening to 30 years ago as I'm bumping along the roads, Highway 21, on my way to Sun Valley every week. So, Don, thanks for joining us. What, 40-plus years in the industry you've been?
Actually, I started in 1967. We're coming up on my 50th year.
Wow. That's crazy.
I don't look in mirrors anymore.
I got to say, I'm going to tell you this. I hope I look like you when I get that age, because I'm telling you, I don't even know what your age is. You probably started like I did when you were like 20 years old.
I am 70.
70. There you go. 20 years old.
Yep.
And so, you know, I understand. It's but I saw you last year when I was back in Boston for a visit. And actually, I think that was the first time I'd seen you in person. But you look great. You look great. And I know you're still
Thank
jetting
you.
Around the country like you were
yep.
still a teenager. So good for you. Good for you. All right. Let's start with like 50 years ago, right? I mean, I don't know where this is going to go today. I just know you have vast experience, and I love the way you bring things down to bullet points for investors. So I want to kind of start with going back and where we are today. Why is it that as we live longer and longer lives, that we have shorter and shorter time frames as investors? And of course, every statistic shows that. Why do you think that is so true today?
Well, there's probably a lot of reasons, and I'm not a shrink, but one thing that comes to mind immediately is the amount of information we're getting.
Okay.
See, I think back to being in my career, in my lifetime, at one point, there were three networks.
Mm-hmm.
And the evening news was 15 minutes. There was no time to opine. People gave the news and got off.
Right.
That was it.
Right.
Now there are 200 million websites, I think 8,500 magazines and newspapers, and 300 or 400 TV stations.
Right.
All giving us information. So I think we're getting so much information, in a sense, we're losing our common sense.
Right, right.
And you remember Shakespeare accused Cassius of thinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of it. We get so much. The other thing, if I can just run with this for a minute.
Yeah, do.
There's a habit in life. There's a thing in life called anchoring. And I read an article, a woman wrote an article that I found very interesting. She had a great analogy. She said, look, if you go to a car dealership and you see a used car, and it's for sale for $8,000. And you go back that afternoon, it's marked up to $10,000. You instinctively say that car's not worth $10,000. It's worth $8,000. Right? On the other hand, if you'd gone to the dealership and the car was $12,000 and you talked the salesman down to $10,000, you'd say, I got a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
In both cases, we're anchoring. We anchor on the $8,000, we anchor on the $12,000. Because the reality is, we're not car experts. We have no idea what the car is worth.
Right.
We've anchored on a price. That's a nasty habit in investing. When an investor gives a financial advisor some money, and I'm going to use an example, it could be $10,000, $50,000, let's just say $100,000 to make the math easy.
Mm-hmm.
A client gives a financial advisor $100,000, and it falls in value to $90,000. The immediate reaction is my investments are broken. But that's because we're anchored on the price, the $100,000. If I were looking at a laptop in Best Buy, and it was $1,000. And I said, that's too much. I'm going to hang in. And I walk in one day, it's marked down to $900, and I buy it. I didn't buy it because I felt it was damaged. I felt I got a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
We have to learn with our investments that because the stock is cheaper than it was a year ago, it's not damaged. It's on sale. It's a better deal. It's the same company. IBM is IBM. General Motors, General Motors. What are you willing to pay for it? So the reason we get so skittish is the volatility drives us crazy because we're anchored on our original investment price. We should be anchoring on the value of the portfolio and say, hey, I've got a good deal now. This stuff's cheaper. That's the way we buy tuna fish. That's the way we buy clothes. We buy stuff on sale. You guys are in the only business in the world. You slash your prices, people run away. And you mark your prices up to all time. They throw money at you. So I think part of it's the amount of information causes us to anchor. And we get the wrong. We're focused on the wrong thing, which is the dollar amount, not the value of the investment. If that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. So let's play on this a little bit. You have a circumstance here where this, in my mind, one of the things I talk about is how this is the easiest, hardest game. There's nothing easier than looking back and saying, is this a high quality corporation that's been in business longer than I've been on Earth, paying rising streams of income, rising streams of cash flow? This is not a hard thing to do. And for pennies, I can go buy that. I can buy a piece of that business and watch my income grow decade after decade. Now, how hard is that to build wealth? That's the simplest thing in the planet, and it's available for $50 a month with most mutual fund companies out there. Now, we take that, and yet we see investor behavior in the simplest thing. Where is the disconnect between all this great information that comes out? And we have all of this available. We have the Library of Congress walking around in our pocket, and we can't. And now we've turned into the world's worst investors in the easiest game in the world. How do we do that? How do we get through to people that says, stop it. Stop doing that.
You've got to paint a vision. You have to tell. It's called vision stories. You've got to make the reward. The investor has to understand the reward at the end is so great. Now, again, I'm a big believer. We don't invest to get rich. We invest so we don't get poor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not your job to make people rich. It's your job to keep people from being poor.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, if you do this, you'll end up not poor. But in the meantime, there are going to be lots of obstacles in the way. Fees, commissions, volatility, bad markets, elections, terrorism, all these things. The vision has to be great enough that you can look over these obstacles in the way and focus on the vision. It's almost like you get, if you've ever been on a boat, but the captain will tell you, if you want to avoid seasickness, focus on the horizon. Don't focus on the water.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, so the point is that what's important is the destination, not the journey. We focus on the journey. It's up to you to constantly remind your clients why they invested in the first place.
Right, right, right.
And you say you're long-term, and you want to be long-term, and you're going to be a good doobie, and all of a sudden you get up in the morning and look at the newspaper or watch the evening news or read the Internet, you go crazy because you're losing money. So when things are going down, there's a thing called recency bias in life, and again, I'm not a shrink, but recency bias is what's happened. If I asked you what you had for lunch every day for the past week, you could tell me what you had for lunch yesterday and maybe Wednesday, but beyond that, who knows, who cares? It's old history. Well, that's the way we approach life. And what's important today is far more important than what than the stuff in the past. Well, that's not true. To the people at the time, 9/11 was, to my mother's generation, the death of John Kennedy was the most egregious act in the history of the world. Mm-hmm. To her mother, it was Pearl Harbor. To the people in 1865, it was Abraham Lincoln's assassination. So everything is poignant at the time, but we tend to shunt it in the past and say only what's happening now is important. And that's called recency bias. So we've got to focus on not what's going on right now, because it will become everything we were worried about today won't matter in 10 years, believe me. Because you couldn't tell me for $100 what you were worried about 10 years ago today.
But, yeah, well, yeah, to your point, we probably were worried about a terrorist attack, and now we're not worried about that anywhere near, like, call it ISIS or what oil's trading
Ebola.
Today.
I think two people in America died of Ebola. We focused on that for weeks. 23 million people have died of AIDS.
Yeah.
Two people, I think two in the United States died of Ebola. But at the time, it was Crimea, Ukraine, Ebola. The press, you know, I'm not demeaning the press, but they're trying to sell newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to sell ad time on TV. They're trying to sell their stories. And bad news sells. You know, small earthquake in Chile, nobody hurt. Well, no thanks, I'm not going to buy that.
Mm-hmm.
So their cliche is, if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
I mean, I say to people all the time, once you become an investor, you're going to see words that scare you to death. You just once you invest, now you really focus on the market, much more than before you weren't investing. So you read words that scare you to death. You'll read market soars 1,000 points, market plunges 900 points. Those are just words. And I asked him, Louis, how would you feel if you got in an elevator tomorrow morning? It didn't say up or down. It said soar or plunge. How would you feel about that? Well, you'd get off the elevator. Well, all it means is up or down.
Mm-hmm.
But the press has a way of sensationalizing things. And now with evening news, you know, 24 hours of news, there's a lot of time to put forth one's opinion. And all these talking heads have opinions. They all think they're smart. They aren't all smart.
Right.
They want us to think they're smart, and they put out their opinions. And I think it scares people. It stirs up emotions.
Mm-hmm. At the very least, it's very short-sighted, very short-term in nature.
Well, it's because this pressure, you know, there's this pressure to be on the when people say recency bias, you say, well, the market's going down, it's going to continue down. Now, that may very well be true for the short term. It's not true for the long term. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, so don't quote me on this, but the day I was born, the Dow was probably 100. The day I got to high school, it was probably 500. When I turned 60, it was 10,000. Here it is at 17,000. I mean, we know the trend is up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when the market's going down and a client or an investor says, oh, my goodness, it's going to continue down, he or she is probably right for the short term. But the trend is up. The first securities issued in this country were Revolutionary War bonds. Commission's going to introduce in 1791, if you can believe that. The modern New York Stock Exchange was founded in 1851. Well, for the 250 years we've been going down, the market's always come back.
Mm-hmm.
It's always going to set new highs. We know that, yet so many people lose money. Why? Poor market timing decisions. So the way to avoid a poor market timing decision is not to market time. I tell people, when you invest money, you put those securities in the same drawer in your head as your mortgage. You're not going to price your house every day. You price your house every day, it's scary to death. Your house is worth zero on Christmas Eve. Well, who's going to buy a house on Christmas Eve? It's worth nothing. And houses go up and down like crazy. The average stock on the New York Stock Exchange can fluctuate as much as 50% any given year.
Mm-hmm.
We can't focus. If our goal is long-term, we've got to ignore the short-term gyrations. It's very hard to do.
Right.
It takes the financial advisor reminding the client, takes discipline, takes focus. Stay focused on watch the horizon, watch the destination, not the journey.
Tough to do. Apparently tougher as we get, as we get more information at our fingertips,
well, our recovery
we ignore
time
history.
Is shorter.
Yeah.
A 60-year-old doesn't have a lot of time to recover. If you're 25 years old and take a hit financially, you go, that hurt, but at least I'll get over it.
Right. But even,
you know,
a 60-year-old may have...
Think about it. Somebody's 45 years old,
mm-hmm.
and they get paid once a month, and they want to retire at age 65. That person's only got 240 paychecks left in his or her life. A 50-year-old has 180 paychecks left. That's not much.
Mm-hmm.
In fact... Right now, as you and I are talking doing this interview, 1 year of college is the cost of a good car, right?
Right.
In 180 months, a 3-year-old is going to be in college. Time has a way of really slipping away.
Yeah.
And saving money is a habit, so you got to get in the habit early. But I think, to your point, the longer we go, the older we get, the shorter recovery time. Look, I live in Florida. I see too many retired guys bagging groceries at Publix. That's not the way it should be.
Right.
I've got a friend down here who was a policeman in New York City his entire career. He moved to Florida to retire, and the bank said, no job, no mortgage. You know, it's tough to pass those tests and then pass those financial tests.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to start as early as you can. You got to stay invested, brave the short term. It involves risk. I mean, that's the way we can't mitigate the risk out of the business. We can modify it a little bit. We can mitigate it. We can't eliminate it. There's risk in investing.
Right.
There's a far greater risk in not investing.
That's fair. But people do. They perceive the risk of price rather than the risk of the value, meaning, you know, companies are still generating massive cash flows and maybe even increasing dividends in the face of declining stock prices, but people don't see that.
Yeah, I grew up, I mean, dividends are living proof that good companies don't use smoke and mirrors.
Right.
We've gotten, the yield used to be much higher. Now the yield in the S&P is probably less than 2%. Companies have gotten away from paying dividends, keeping the cash themselves. Dividends are wonderful. You can find, getting a dividend, a good dividend, a good company is like getting paid while you wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody owes it to themselves to look at good, high-quality, dividend-paying stocks.
Yeah, and because of that, they have a proven history. It's not like you're taking a wild flyer on a brand new IPO.
No. Well, no, it's not a lottery ticket. It's a fractional share of ownership.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, Don, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, let's talk about if you will, some of the history here, where you know basically we went from the day you only ate what you killed, meaning you got commissions, to fees, and this, what is that? You know, is this a better environment now? And we'll talk to Don about that here in a moment. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, and this is a special recording. And as I mentioned before, I'm here today with Don Connolly, who has Don Connolly 24/7 is his company, and he's now been in the business for approaching 50 years, and still zipping around the country. Before our talk today, he just came in from San Diego, so he's still running around the country, helping coach and push some really careful and thoughtful ideas to advisors and their clients. And I think it's just one of those things that over the years that you develop an ability, he certainly has, of keeping things simple. And that's really, I think, in so much of our industry, we've gotten away from that and taking these complex things and talking about Sharpe ratios and P.E. ratios and all these nonsensical things that just make people's eyes gloss over. Don, thanks again for joining us. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you just keeping going, keeping the good fight going.
Absolutely, Dave. My pleasure.
Let's, we were touching on investor behavior, and I'm going to come back to that as well. But it's also this in this idea of a self-help world. I mean, kind of tying that together. We're now talking about everything is all about price, right? It's like, you know, we can buy this index fund over here, and you can't beat the index, and you shouldn't hire advisors, and you can get a robo advisor for like, you know, 25 or 50 basis points. Why would you hire like a real human being? And I thought, you know, this is really quite a difference in the way things have been transacted in a very short period of time. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, we can probably blame it on Walmart, right?
Yeah.
The average person in America used to buy 20-some pieces of apparel a year. Now it's up in the 80s. Why shouldn't I buy three blouses? They're only $10.
Right.
So I think certain stores would like us to believe that you can, for $10, you can get the same jeans you wore as a kid with all that quality. That's simply not true. Quality's diminished. But nonetheless, call it the Walmart mentality, where everything is price, 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 price. A robo-advisor is a computer program that can buy stock and overheads cut down so we can sell it cheaper. We can charge less for it. Let's talk about, so robo-advisors can do a lot. They're good, they're smart, they buy, it's a good program. But let me tell you what a robo-advisor can't do. A robo-advisor can't hold a widow's hand. That's what a robo-advisor can't do. This is a relationship business. No one has ever bought anything in the history of the world because it's the cheapest price. Ever anything. I don't care
what
it is.
3 minute stations. 3 minutes to your next Fox News 3030.
They elect to pay the cheapest price because they don't see the value the competition's offering.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens, our business has become commoditized. All big businesses get commoditized. When a business gets commoditized, that's when the paperboy thinks he can do your job. Everybody can do the job. Everybody can buy stock. Well, it's not true, but nonetheless, margins get very thin. Prices start to fall. Technology invites in competition. All of a sudden, there's a race to the bottom to give the stuff away. Now, I think commissions and fees are a commodity, and commodities seek their own level. Maybe 5% is too high, 25 basis points is too low. Somewhere in the middle should be a normal fee or a commission. But generally speaking, as Seth Godin says, people who race to the bottom don't have a good story or good products. That's why they're selling it so cheaply. You don't get quality. I deal with a lot of financial advisors that feel I've got to discount my fees. I can't charge my clients full fees. These are the same people that wait in line at restaurants.
2 minutes, stations. Mm-hmm. 2 minutes to your next Fox News 30:30.
They don't buy a cup of coffee. They go to Starbucks. Why? Because they perceive consistency and value. Starbucks is very competent and very consistent. They've revolutionized the experience of buying a cup of coffee. Apple is very consistent and very competent. If a financial advisor wants to compete with robo-advisors, he or she has to be very consistent and competent.
Mm-hmm.
People don't pay just price alone. They pay for value. And if the value is missing, go for it. Get a robo-advisor. That's what I do. But I can tell you, I won't do it on the phone because it'll bore people to death, but I can tell you 50 things, literally, actually 80 things, because I've made a list, that a financial, 80 things a financial advisor can do for clients. And it's not a question of dumping the money into a program and charging 25 basis points. There's much more to it than that. That's without a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And these companies are great.
1 minute, stations. 1 minute to your next Fox News 30:30.
If you don't want service. Not conventional service. I'm sorry, if you don't want a relationship,
mm-hmm.
the human element. But I'm telling you now, decisions to invest are emotional. It's never objective. Financial advisors, people at Fidelity, E-Trade, these are very objective people. They deal with numbers all day long. And the language of objective thinking is numbers. But decisions are emotional. They're not objective. And to make an emotional decision, in my opinion, you need to be in a relationship with somebody very competent. Doctors make tons of mistakes. We don't trust the insurance industry. None of us do. We don't trust the healthcare industry. We don't trust the U.S. government. We all trust our doctors. We ask them, well, why? Well, I think my doctor's trying his best. You ask people, what makes you think your doctor's trying his best? The answer is always the same answer, face-to-face meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go through life without face-to-face meetings,
I'm Lily Lee.
Get
more
advisor.
Details on the
Sit
killing
of
boy star Christina Grimmie in Orlando last night after her concert.
The suspect was armed with two handguns, had additional magazines, unknown what his plans were for after killing Christina, but it's very heroic actions by Marcus Grimmie to jump in and definitely could have prevented future
Chief John Mina of the Orlando Police Department, the suspect turned the gun on himself after being tackled by Grimmie's brother. The 22-year-old singer from New Jersey finished third during season six of the show 2 years ago, competing on the team of Maroon 5-star Adam Levine. And a search underway for the driver of a white BMW, which police in Texas hit and dragged a homeless woman near downtown Houston. She died. Fox News, we report. You decide.
Five-star restaurant just for the food. They go there for the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're going to get a financial advisor, you've got to get one who makes every visit to his or her office a five-star experience.
It's a great point.
I wouldn't pay a financial advisor full commission just to execute a trade. Why do that, a full fee? I want more than that for my money. I want you there when you have nothing to sell. I want the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I want my doctor available by phone. I want to be able to make an appointment to go see my doctor. I think next to the family doctor, the financial advisor is the most important person the family's ever going to meet. So why would you do it online?
Mm-hmm. Well, especially when the big decisions in life come, right? I mean, day to day, you don't need that. You don't need that.
No.
But when the markets,
but, you know, we all spend a day trying to go through a day in America, not buy something made in China. And it falls apart. We say, well, it's made in China. Well, we don't have to have that mentality. We don't have to accept poor quality.
Mm-hmm.
We have the right to demand quality. You may pay more than one, but it's better quality.
Great. Great point.
That's a relationship versus robo-advisors are great. Robo-advisors can buy stock. They're computers. They're smart. If all you want is the investments, get a robo-advisor. If you want a relationship, someone to talk to, someone to hold your hand and walk you through the minefield, you need an advisor.
You know, in some ways, I think this the whole idea of the robo-advisor is going to make this industry better. I think it's going to force the lower end to get better because the robo-advisor can certainly service that. And the higher quality firms that really are there, and they're there in a quality way with quality investments, reasonably priced, all those things, they're going to shine, it seems to me. I just, so anyway.
You're absolutely right. I'll tell you a quick story. I had cataract surgery a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Take the lens out, put a new lens in. There are different kinds of lenses you can buy. Now, I bought the lenses that are adjustable. So I can see, I've worn glasses for 50 years. I no longer wear glasses. I'm 20/20 reading and far away.
Hmm.
Very expensive lenses, but I got them because it was worth it to me not to sit on my glasses for the 3,000th time. So the cost, it took 4.5 minutes on one eye, and you wait, and when time elapses, you go in for a test, everything's fine, do the other eye, that was 4 minutes. So it's 8.5 minutes of laser surgery. And I said to the doctor, kidding, but I wasn't kidding, I said, doctor, $12,000 was the cost. I said, that's a lot of money for 8.5 minutes. He said, Don, I'm not paid by the minute. It was a great answer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm paid for knowing what I'm doing. You paid for the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
He said, next time, do it yourself. You'll get a discount doctor. Your eyesight.
It's a great point.
So he's right. He's not paid by the minute.
No.
Financial advisor's not paid to pick a mutual fund. He or she's paid for the years and years of training and sacrifice and dedication it took to get to know which mutual fund to pick.
Mm-hmm. Yep, great point. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick break here, and when we come back, much, much more with Don Connolly. Stay tuned.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello and welcome back to Money Matters. Again, a special recording here with Don Connolly, who is a legend in our industry. Been around for 50 years in the industry, still traveling back and forth across the country all the time, talking to advisors and investors, and we are privileged to have him here today. I really appreciate it. Don, thanks again for spending time.
Thank you, David.
Let's touch on, in the last segment we talked about, you know, investors that's what we're going to keep talking about, though, because I also want to circle back here and talk about the investor behavior. You give a great analogy here to how investors can misperceive things just because of price movement. And I remember it's like a deck of cards, or not a deck of cards, but you have 10 cards.
You
know, five red, five black. Why don't you tell us that story and how people react? Because I think that's just such a classic. If it's going down, I want to sell. And it makes no sense, no logic. It's a complete disconnect.
Yeah, the analogy was, if I try to remember, I mean, I will remember it, but I'm trying to get the fine points down. We have 10 playing cards, five are red, five are black. We put them all face down. And I'll say, bet a dollar, and, you know, they're all mixed up, but they're face down.
Mm-hmm.
Would you pay me a dollar to pick a card? What are the odds of picking a black card? And the odds are 50-50, right? They're five red, five black.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, right, now pick a card, and bang, you pick a red card. Now, you're wrong. You've lost your dollar. Do you want to bet another dollar? Okay, now what are your odds? And the odds are better you'll pick a black card, right?
Yeah.
Because there are more of them.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, if we pick three red cards in a row, now the odds are huge we're going to pick a black card. We say, that's it, I quit. I'm not going to. I say, what, I bet $100 on a black card? $500? No, I'm losing. I'm quitting.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do with investing. Every time the market goes down and we start to lose money, the more it happens, the better the chance of the market turning around. But at some point, we get to the point where we're almost like bluffed. I'm getting out.
Right.
The fact is, every time you pick a red card, the odds are picking a black card or greater. If you could pick five red cards in a row, it happens, right? Now your odds are 100%. You're going to pick a black card.
Right.
Question is, do you have what it takes to stand there and take that heat through five red cards?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because every time the market's gone down in the last 250 years, it's come back.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time. It's never failed to come back. If it doesn't come back, it's going to be the first time ever. And every time it's come back, it's set an eventual new high.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have the time? That's why the older you get, the shorter your fuse gets. You know, you get, wow, I may not bounce back here. I'm 65, 70 years old. This is freaky.
Mm-hmm.
25, you go, no big deal. Because at 25, you have no money. That's the problem.
that is the problem, but isn't it? Yeah.
It's the black card, red card thing. The more we lose, the faster we want to run to the sidelines. I want to get out till things get better. The biggest investment mistake in the world is not investing at all. I mean, it's not starting. That's the biggest mistake. But the second biggest mistake is not going all the way. I see it all the time.
Mm.
You get out with the intention of getting back in later when things calm down. You never get back in. You start overthinking. It's really, really hard to get out and get back in.
Super hard.
The trick is to stay in. I think if you make it – I heard Peter Lynch is the mythical, godlike money manager in our business. He ran the Magellan Fund for years. Brilliant guy.
Mm-hmm.
He had the best track record ever amassed. He said, you know, no one's ever owned a track record.
Yeah.
They don't stay in the beginning. But
yeah. He
made the point on a radio show that I raised, if I buy a stock for the Magellan Fund and the stock goes down, I buy more, unless I've changed my fundamental analysis. There are two types of analysis, fundamental and technical. Fundamental being the numbers, the base, the hardcore, what's beneath this company.
Mm-hmm.
So if I change my fundamental analysis, the stock's down, I'll sell it. So either get out or you buy more. If I haven't changed my analysis, I buy more because it's a way to add more cheaply. So I think, to paraphrase Warren Buffett, if you're going to be a net buyer of stocks all your life, you should welcome price declines as a way to add to your portfolio at cheaper prices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the most money made in the market is short term. Commodities, day trading, those are the biggest gains you can make. It's also the biggest risk, David,
right.
The biggest loss.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you now, mom and dad can't sit in Bangor, Maine, or Sun Valley, Idaho, and outthink the guys on Wall Street and the gals on Wall Street. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
So if you want a day trade and you want a short term, it's really, really risky. You'll make big gains if you're right, you know, for the amount of time you expend, but you'll lose a lot too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's an awfully hard thing. You know, Peter, picking up on what you said about Peter Lynch, he also said something amazing when he was asked about when he left, and this again back to investor behavior. You must be so proud of the amount of money you've made for all of your clients during your time. And he said, not at all. I'm extremely disappointed because the net investor actually didn't make money with our fund. They lost a little bit.
Yeah, no one's ever owned a track record. That's right.
Right, yeah, they just don't hang in there. They were buying. Well, how was that? Because they were buying and selling at all the wrong times. And people repeat that behavior over and over again. I think Einstein.
For sure, it's an emotional roller coaster.
Right.
Investing's an emotional roller coaster.
It is. It is.
And no one's emotions get tested as much as when they're losing money.
Right, right, right.
They feel they're losing money short term.
Well, they feel they are. There's still the cash flows and all those things in those companies. And even if you're – anyway, the point is that even in the greatest mutual fund record – And you know, you can argue others have had longer records, but his was phenomenal. How you don't make money in that environment is inconceivable. The people couldn't try to be that bad.
Yeah, well, you run for the sidelines. The assumption you're going to get back in later, which you never do.
Right on. All right, so let's you know what? Let's take our final break here, and when we come back, we're going to have a nice long segment left. And again, this is a special recording with Don Connolly, and you're listening to Money Matters. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station.